I've known Robin over 10 years, and I know how to tell a story. I tell you what, the last 10 years, I've always kept in touch with Robin, sometimes touching because of moving and life's experiences in and out of my life for almost all the time I've been sober. And I don't know what Robin's story before that, though, so I'm going to tie it all in because the year she's been sober, you know, one thing I always know about Robin is whenever I've seen her, I always am real curious what color her hair is going to be this week. And what she's going to be wearing, because she's a colorful person, so I know you're going to enjoy hearing her story. So come on up, Robin.
Yay, Robin!
Hey, y'all. I'm Robin. I'm an alcoholic. Wow, this is big. thanks, Bill. This is home. I did this clubhouse. I got sober here April 5th, 1986. And it was down the street, and it was like in a trailer. And there was an exterminator, big bug on the top of the building. And there was only like 8 or 10 people. So this is like awesome. This is a beautiful thing to see, you know. And this is an honor. I just want to say what an honor and privilege it is to be asked to speak here. It's just, it really touches me. And I'm nervous, so I'll just put that out there. I don't do this very often, but I was taught around here when you're asked to do something, you show up and you do it, and that's what we do. I'm here to carry the message, you know, and I'm going to do the best I can to kind of say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up here, a couple of miles from here. And about 3 or 4 miles from here. And I think that there used to be a phone here. And I'm a 12-step call. I'm like where people go out and back in the day they used to do that, you know. And there would be a call and people would go. And, you know, they didn't know what they were going into. And but these two women came, you know. I called and was like, you know, but I'm going to back up and just kind of tell you guys a little bit about, I kind of jump all over the place. I didn't write anything down. I hope that's okay. I just kind of, you know, just fly by the seat of my pants here. What I can tell you is, I think that when I first started drinking, actually I was about 16, and when I took my first drink. But when I did, it was like, that was it. You know, it was like that was the train I was going to take. You know, everything went away. All the fear, it made me, smarter, prettier, more courage, you know, just everything. So I decided that was the answer. That was going to be the answer, you know. And so from that moment forward, what I can say is I just ran with it. You know, I thought that's it. I found the answer. And so what happened was, all through high school, you know, I drank and hid it mostly as best I could. But, a major thing happened when I was 18. My dad passed away of a heart attack. And I was the one that actually took him to the hospital, and I was the only family member that was there when he died. And, what that did was my drinking just took off fourfold just from then on. And I think that what happened was I was already in full-blown, alcoholism, meaning that I had the DTs if I didn't drink. You know, it was like I was sick in the morning physically if I didn't take a drink. And that was already happening. And some people can say, well, you know, it's not an age thing. I'm here to tell you that, you know, because all the physical was, that was there. And then all the not yets, that had happened too. You know, what I can tell you is my first job. This is funny because I had to get a job. My dad died. There was no will, no insurance, and I had to get a job, y'all. So what I decided was, well, I'm not going to put the drink down, okay? That's not going to happen. So I have to work where I can drink. You know, I mean, that everything was, all my thinking was centered around the drinking, as y'all know, you know. And so I got a job at a bar. So this is my thinking, you know, I mean, that's so I can drink 24 hours a day because I'm not going to put it down. So I got a job at a bar, and that's what I did. You know, I just and you know there were you know there's pieces that I can't remember. You know, because I was somewhat of a blackout drinker, so there's some pieces I don't remember at that time. That all I know is that if I was awake, I was drinking. You know, and there were 3 DUIs, 2 within a month of each other. You know, and I was like, when I had to go to court, the judge was like, you know, you have a problem drinking and driving. I was like, no, I just have a problem driving. So I'll take a cab everywhere. You know, I'm not anything to not give up the drink. You know, I just was not going to give up the drink. That was my fear also was huge, that if I gave up the drink, how sick I would be. You know, because I was physically addicted too, and so I would just be really sick. And so it was maintenance. It was like I had to drink to maintain not having the shakes. You know, and but I think what happened was, you know, the incomprehensible demoralization that the book talks about. That's what began to happen. You know, I think that that moment of clarity that maybe, you know, we get, I think the gift of desperation. But I remember it distinctly because I was at a shopping place, like a store, and there was a lady with a small child, and she was pulling the child closer to her, you know. She looked at me and was like pulling the child, like, you know, and, you know, don't go near her, you know, and, yeah, because, you know, I didn't bathe often, you know, and I mean, I probably looked, you know, really crazy. And I was really crazy, and I did not bathe often, and it was apparent. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that, and also I became homeless. I became all the, you know, I became all of the things like you'd think. When you think of an alcoholic, you think of Skid Row. You know, that's what I always thought. You know, with Mad Dog 2020 or something in a paper bag. But you know what I can tell you is I became that. You know, and you know, I became that, you know, out of choice too. I didn't want to go back and I could have gone home to my family, but I didn't want them to see how bad that I had gotten. So I chose, you know, to be homeless, you know, and that's what I did. And all the things that come with that, you know, I am grateful to be standing here today. I mean, I really am. And what I can tell you, the incomprehensible demoralization, you know, what happened was the moment of clarity when I thought, you know, normal people don't live like this. You know what I mean? That moment, like, I don't know if you guys can relate, but when you see people driving to work and they have normal lives, and you know that, you know, I was like, that's not me. You know, I don't know anything about that. And I don't want to know anything about it, you know. And I think that what happened was I thought I was going to die an alcoholic death, is what I can tell you. I really thought that I was going to die or I was going to be in an institution, you know. And I thought it was going to happen pretty quickly, you know, real quickly. And when I made the call, the 12-step call, and, you know, I don't know if there's still a phone here, but, you know, there was back in that day. And these two women came to get me, and they brought me to my first meeting. And it was a speaker meeting, and there was a girl speaking and telling her story. Her name was Karen. I'll never forget it. And I picked up my white chip, my first white chip. And what I can tell you about it is the two women that brought me to the meeting said, do you have any questions? And I said, yeah, because I tried to drink a cup of coffee and it was like this, you know, and the coffee was sloshing everywhere. And I had the DTs really bad. And, you know, they said, do you have any questions? And I said, when am I going to be able to hold this cup of coffee? And, you know, which, you know, was important to me. I was like, when am I going to be able to hold this without a drink? Because I just can't do that. And, you know, because my hands shook real bad. And I felt like everybody here could see that, you know, and, what they told me was to keep coming back, you know, keep coming back, and no matter what happens, it will get better, just keep coming back. And, you know, that was the one thing that I remembered, because people were saying a lot of stuff, and it kind of just sounded like an animation, you know, like, wah, 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 you know, I didn't understand any of what people were talking about. But what I do know is everybody was laughing. And I thought, you know, wow, that's weird. People are laughing, and they look like they took showers and, you know, stuff like that. Everybody was all, you know, cleaned up and you know, laughing among themselves. And I was like, that's just so weird. These people seem to be having fun, you know, and they're laughing and stuff. And, you know, I couldn't imagine what were they laughing about, you know what I mean? Because I couldn't imagine. And then I met people that told me they had double digits sober. And, you know, I was like, oh, they're lying. You know, that was like, yeah, that is not true. It was, yeah, you can tell me that if you want to, but okay. And I just, you know, it just couldn't fathom it at all, you know. And but what I did get was keep coming back, and no matter what. And you know, I did. I just kept showing up no matter what. And they told me to go to 90 and 90. I think I went to, like, I sat out there and I went to, like, every meeting every couple of hours because I didn't really know what else to do. You know, I didn't have, I felt safe here. I had no other place to go. I had no, you know, I had no friends. I had no place to go. I had, you know, my family sure didn't want to talk to me. So I don't know what else to do except keep coming back. And I remember I had all these problems, and I was like, oh, my God, I got to go to court for DUI. Oh, my God, oh, my God. And I was, like, really running around following people. What am I going to do about all these problems? And they were like, you know what, just keep coming back. And also they said, why don't you make coffee? And I was like, why? How's that going to help me? And they were like, just make coffee. And I did. I made the coffee, and, you know, and I put up the chairs. And the whole time I was fussing, going, you don't understand, I have all these problems. And they were like, yep, just keep doing this. And, you know, that was my first lesson in how to just keep showing up and get out of myself, you know. And then I found my first sponsor. It was funny. I followed, you know, back in that day there was like 8 men and 2 women. So I had no choice. I had to, you know, I had this guy, and he was my sponsor. I followed him around all the time. And he just, you know, I just didn't know what else to do. I just did what, I copied him. Whatever he did, I just did. And, you know, because they kind of said, if you want what we have, you have to do what we do. And so I would just kind of follow him around and watch what he did. And I think it's a matter also of, I didn't want to die. You know what I mean? I just, you got to want to be sober more than you want to drink. And, you know, I knew what was out there. And they also told me, if you try this and this doesn't work, then we'll refund all that. You know what I mean? Why don't you just give this a shot? And, you know, and I was like, okay, I didn't have any other option. This was the last stop. And so I said, okay, that makes sense, you know. And so I kept, and early on, I just had to go a few hours at a time. Sometimes I would have to just watch the clock and you know, and just go a few hours at a time, you know. And also, I hit my knees, and I asked for God to remove the craving. And, you know, that was my first experience of, you know, because I feel like he did. I felt like, you know, I prayed for the craving to be removed, and it was. And, you know, that to me is like the miracle. That to me is the miracle. And, you know, and when I got here, I knew my life was unmanageable. You know, that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. That was pretty clear, you know. And then came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, first I had to admit that I was insane. And I really don't think that normal people, well, I mean so-called normal, would live like I was living, you know. And so, you know, that, and then when I made a decision to turn my will and my life under the care of God as we understood Him, that was my experience in praying for the, you know, the obsession to be removed. And, you know, nothing had worked until then. That's all I can tell you. Nothing had worked. And an amazing miracle happened, and it was removed from me. And then, but also, you know, made it, well, I didn't want to get into the four step yet. But what I wanted to say is turning my will and my life under the care of God, you know, I mean, when I got here, my first sponsor told me, if you don't know what to believe in, or that you're having trouble with that, keep it really simple. And just believe that there's something greater out there and you're not in it. And I was like, okay, you know, I can do that. And then the group was my higher power for a really long time, you know. And so that was, you know, but what I can tell you is also when I got into Made a Searching and Fearless Moral Inventory, like a lot of people, like around here, I thought, oh, this is great. This is when I get to write down all of the people that made me mad. And, you know, and all the stuff that people did to me. And what I learned in doing that, no, you know, I got to look at my part in every single thing. And I got to take a really good look at who I was, who I had been. And, you know, it is honest, open-minded, and willing. And I think that's what they told me when I got here. You know, and I had to be honest, open-minded, and willing to take a good look and to do that. And I think, and I couldn't have done that without a higher power, without God in my life. These steps brought me to God. And I'm just, you know, but when I got here, that terrified me. I was like, oh, they're talking about God. They're going to make me sell Bibles door to door or something, you know. And I was really, you know, but you know what? I thought if that's what they have me do, it's better than what I've been doing, you know. And so I was like, whatever I got to do, I am willing to go to any length. And that was what my first sponsor asked me, are you willing to go to any length? And to the and today, that still rings in my ears. It still does. You know, am I willing to go to any length? You know, and but what I wanted to say is we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character and humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. And, you know, today, what I wanted, I was thinking on the way over here is, you know, I'm telling you guys my story, but guess what? I don't have to be perfect. And, you know, that's huge. That's a huge freedom. I used to think I had to do everything perfectly, you know, and everybody in my life had to be perfect, too. So I had to be perfect. They had to be perfect. And you know what? I've learned so much in here that, you know, it's okay, you know. And I don't have to be perfect. I can do the best I can. And when I make a mistake, I can actually go and say, I'm really sorry I made that mistake, and what can I do to make it right? And, you know, I've learned that in here, taking responsibility. You know, I take responsibility today. I mean, it's endless. I mean, the what I've learned in here, I grew up in here. And what I can tell y'all is that I didn't know how to do anything when I got here. You know, I just told y'all I was like homeless, hopeless, and all of that. And also what I got here was hope. Hope. You know, that's what I heard. And when I, the first meeting with the speaker, there was hope. You know, there was this girl telling her story, and she was saying things that I wouldn't have told anybody. You know, and she was standing up here telling a whole room full of people. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. And, you know, but it really, it really went through to my heart. And, you know, and because that girl told her story like that, you know. And anyway, what I told y'all, I'll probably jump all around, sorry. But anyway, what I was going to say is that, you know, taking responsibility when I had to go back and make my amends, you know, the things I've learned in here. You know what? I was totally unemployable when I came in here. I didn't know how to do anything. I didn't know how to interview for a job. I didn't know how to I didn't know how to be nice. I didn't know how to say please and thank you. And I just didn't know how to do any of the basic living things that people do. You know, I guess people know that, but I didn't. And so I had to learn that in here, you know. My sponsor had to teach me how to suit up and show up, you know. Do what you say you're going to do. These basics things, you know, and that I had to learn here. And then to take responsibility for my actions. And that was huge, you know. One of my favorite parts in the book is the smashing of the ego. The ego has to totally be smashed. So, you know, and the longer I'm around, the less I know in here, you know. And I really firmly believe that. The ego has to be smashed. And I have to remain teachable, you know. If I think I know everything, when I came in here, I thought I knew so much. I didn't know anything. And I had to get open-minded, honest, open-minded, and willing. I had to get open to listening to someone else. You know, my ideas did not work. I had to get open to listening. And I have to do that to this day. It's huge. I think I do it more today than I even did it when I first got here. There's been so many things that have happened in my life that I really had to use that and really be honest, open-minded, and willing. And I think about that a lot, you know, open to what someone else can show me, you know. And I'm frequently wrong. I'm wrong a lot. And, you know, and sometimes I have to be open to seeing, you know, what someone is somebody else's side of it. But and doing the inventory. That's kind of what I wanted to talk about. Anyway, I'm backing up. When I was 22, I got married. And I got married to somebody on the street, because I was on the street then, you know. So I married somebody on the street, too. And great idea, right? So, you know, we were like homeless and desolate and on the street together. And just a life of debauchery, you know. And that was just kind of how that went. And there were lots of physical altercations, and there were lots of, you know, I could go on and on about that, and the where, you know, the things that happened. But the thing is, if I had not, in my opinion, had not been in the throes of alcoholism, I may not have gone down that road. But I did, and I was, and that's what happened to me. And I'm lucky to be alive today. It was not a good scene. I've had my nose broke. I've been, you know, I've been beat up horribly. I've had, you know, lots of terrible bad things happen. And what wound up happening is just that I was terrified to get away from him, and it took years, actually. It took several years. I moved, and he found me, and I would come home, and there he was, and I got beat up again. And then he, you know, it was on and on and on, and it just went on and on. And the thing is that I survived that. It did eventually, you know. It's funny what happens when you get sober. You know, people go away. You know, some things just kind of take care of themselves. And, you know, people that hung out with me, they didn't call me because, you know, I got sober. And they didn't want to call me because why would they want to do that? Because they don't want to get sober. So that was just the life. And that, what I can say is I was living the life. And then what happened was, I think after that, what I can tell you is whenever I had, you know, a couple of years sober here, you know, I moved to, I lost my license. I had a UI, I lost my license. People had to come and get me and bring me to meetings. And they did that a lot. And it was a real experience of having, and some people said no, a lot, some people said no, I can't, and I had to go, okay, and ask someone else, and it was a real good lesson in asking for help, and I had to do that, and it's really funny, my sponsor that at the time used to bring me to meetings, and I would be in the back seat, and he had a sponsee that was this guy that was in the front seat. And we hated each other, so we fought all the way to the meeting, all the way back. And, I mean, just at each other. And, you know, and it's really, when I look back on that, I love that guy today, by the way. So, anyway, it was just, you know, but, there was, you know, I had like 30 days sober, and I can remember going to the meeting, and we were just like bickering back and forth. And my sponsor at the time told me that part of my service work was to go help this guy move. I had to go to his house and pack up boxes and help him move. And, you know, I can't tell you how much I didn't want to do that. And my sponsor highly suggested that I do it. And he said, I didn't ask you how you felt about it. I want you to go do it. And I did it. I went and did it. And he said, I want you to do it, and I want you to be nice about it. And so I went and did it, and I had to be nice about it. And he taught me, too, about that. You know, you asked what you can do to be of help, you know, and regardless of how you feel about it. And I loved him. He was really great, and he was. And, you know, he taught me so many things, like, early on. And but anyways, long story short, I said, God is in my heart today. You know what I mean? Many years later, and we still see each other, and he just has a special place in my heart. Because I grew up with him, so to speak. But anyway, what I was going to say is when I had a couple of years sober, I thought I didn't have a car. I didn't have a license, didn't have a car. So my idea was to move to the city so I could take the bus to meetings. Well, I moved right by the meeting where there was a meeting so I could go every day. And I did. This was my thinking. And then lo and behold, I think I had about, I had 2 years sober. And I met a guy who had 60 days. So we decided to get married, you know. And this made complete sense to me. And also, I'm still working at that bar that I was working at. I still was working at. And I did that 5 or 6 years into my sobriety. So I do believe, this is just for me. I believe that regardless of my environment or my situation, if I have the desire to be sober, I can do that. And I really believe that. And because if I can't change my situation, then the way I see it is that God is always with me. And I do believe God was with me in the gutter, in the trenches. You know, and I wanted to back up and say that, you know, there was some things that happened early on before I made that call to come in here to pick up that white chip. That horrible bar that I worked at. I worked at this bar that didn't have a name. You know what I mean? It's the kind of bar that you don't know about it, you know? And just certain people know about this place. And it never closes. It's open 24 hours, you know? This is the kind of places I chose to work at or be at. And you know what happened? This is to me, there's so many miracles. That's what I wanted to talk about tonight. The miracles that have happened in my life. The manager of that particular place, my boss, was in the program, which is really hard to believe. You know, so I'm not kidding when I say God was with me in the gutter, because he would be talking to me like, you know, don't you think you might ought to clean up? I was like, are you nuts? And you know what I mean, and yeah, you know, but he kind of worked on me. He kept planting that seed, and I would look at him and be like, wow, he really did. He got sober. Wow. And so I really looked at him, and you know, but that seed was getting planted, you know, for when I made that call. But also, what happened was a couple of weeks after that, you know, I did make the call and come into here. I also, at the same time, about that same time, I had to have major surgery, and I was very ill and did not know that. And they took me to the hospital and to Grady. And if I don't know if you guys know this, but Grady is a very scary place. You know, there's like very, you know, big rats sometimes. There really were. Some people are like, you saw some big rats. I'm like, no, there really were some. And it was terrifying. I had to wait for my surgery. I had to wait like a while because there were people more critical than me, even though I was serious. And so I thought that I may die. And what happened was my mom was at the hospital. I looked at her, and I saw that moment of clarity again. I saw her face for a moment, and I saw, you know, what had happened, what I had done to her. I saw the pain in her face. And when they were asking me, I had to wait like a long time for my surgery. And they bring a person in that makes a list of all of how much you drink and all of this stuff. And so when they put you to sleep, they kind of know all that. Well, he made the list and he said, you know, you really may not survive this. And I was like, what? And he said, you really might not wake up from this. This might be it. And I was like, oh, my God. And he said, you know, you're pretty young. He said, have you ever thought about all the things you'd like to do that maybe you've never done in your life? And I was like, wow, no. You know, and then I started thinking about all the things that I wouldn't get to do that I hadn't done. And he was really very cold about it, because he said, well, isn't this what you wanted? You've been trying to kill yourself slowly, but you're offing yourself here. Isn't this what you wanted? Why are you crying? And I was like, wow, you know? And because I thought, this is it. I really, really might not make it out of this. And you know what? Also, what happened was I started praying really hard, too. And in my prayer, I was, of course, that foxhole prayer. But if I make it out of this, I will try to find another way of life. And I did. I made that call. My first day home from the hospital, I did make that call, come to my first meeting. But, you know, and that was where I heard the term wet brain. Mm-hmm. I never heard that term before. And the wet brain is, I understand that to be the last stages of alcoholism, which means you can drink one drink and be in a blackout. You know, that is the stages, the final stages of alcoholism. And you can cross that point of no return, you know, and you don't come back from it. But anyway, long story short is that's what happened. And I came in, I picked up my wife's shift. And I've already kind of fast-forwarded to, you know, I got married to my second husband, who had 60 days, and we were kids. And then I was like, you know, we were going to meetings, and we found people to go. I thought my life would be over when I got sober. I found people to go hear music with, and I found people to go see movies with, and I found people to laugh and have fun with. And, you know, I was like, I wore lots of, that, you know, Bill was talking about my hair was apple green, and I was wearing lots of hardware back in the day, you know, thigh-high leather boots, lots of chains hanging off, and I have a good bit of tattoos, and I was thinking, you know, anything to keep everybody, and, you know, it works pretty good. You know, if you snarl at everybody, they stay away. And but you know what happened, y'all? The coolest thing happened is that I met other people like that in here. You know, that were sober. And then we could all sit around and snarl together. And so that's what we did. We sat around, snarled together. And but we stayed sober, you know. You know, life went on. You know, I married this guy who had 60 days, and we moved together to Savannah, Georgia. And long story short, you know, we did the deal, and we stayed sober. And the thing is that, you know, but I know why they say don't get in a relationship. I know that, because it was rough. And we had a tarantula named Elvis. And I remember that, you know, and both of us had apple green hair. And we were just, you know, I don't know, it was such a crazy time. But what I can tell you is I'm grateful, though. He is my friend today. He is my friend. We're no longer married, but he is my dear friend. And what I can tell you is that the amazing miracles. Anyway, I wanted to talk about, like, all of those. I'm taking too long, but I wanted to move forward. And I wanted to tell y'all that at some point in my sobriety, I decided that all I needed was the right guy, the right job, all the right stuff, and my life would work. And I wanted to tell y'all that I did that. And you know, it didn't work. And I did that, and I was really miserable, and I almost drank behind it. I mean, it was painful. It was extremely painful. It brought me to my knees. There have been quite a few things in sobriety that have brought me to my knees, because I had to learn in here from, you know, I had to make all these mistakes. I had to learn. And, you know, but what I've learned in here is no matter what, I keep showing up. No matter what. And, you know, and there are people in here that have seen me completely lose it in sobriety. You know, I've made so many mistakes. I've lost my mind so bad in here. And Tom will tell you. So anyway, you know, whenever he really will. Y'all can go see him. He's seen it. But we've known each other since I came in. But, you know, what I wanted to say is that, and I did that. I kept thinking if I could just change my hair color, if I could just look right, if I could just get the right job, marry the right guy, have the big house. I did. I got married. I picked this guy, have the big house, moved to L.A. I'm burning up Melrose. And you know what wound up happening is it didn't work. It fell apart. And, you know, because this is all about the inside, you know. And what I can tell y'all is that when I had to really get down and do the work. And, you know, and what I can tell you is that doing this work gave me a heart. It gave me compassion. It gave me some empathy. I don't think I had that when I got here. And I think that what I can tell you also is that, that marriage lasted about 8 years, and then we got divorced, and I came back here. At the moment, what I can say is, a couple of years ago, it was December 16, 2011, I was diagnosed with cancer. I went through the chemo, the radiation, 5 surgeries, lost the hair. You know, the doctor was like, these things are going to happen to you, and I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to do that. And you know what? I got through it. And I'm going to say, I lost my chemo affects your brain, in case people don't know. And you do and say weird stuff, and you're kind of nutty. And the medicines make you kind of nutty, and you're fighting for your life. And I had to stay sober, and I had to come in here, and I had to like cry and act like a nut, and it's okay, because you know what I learned in here, because no matter what you walk through in here, somebody else has already done it. You know what I mean? And I started looking for those people that had already walked through this. And I was like, how do you do this? And no matter what I walk through, there's always been somebody in here that's walked through it before me. And all I can tell you is that none of it has been a reason for me to pick up a drink. I don't want to ever go back to how it was when I came in here. That's what I can tell you. And I believe this program really does work, and I really owe my life to here. And I think that, but what I wanted to say is that when I did go back and make my amends, this is a huge thing too. I was thinking this the other day, all those people are in my life today, which, you know, I mean, 30 years later or something like that, which is crazy. If you had told me there might be like just a few, but those relationships got healed. And, you know, I can't explain that. I mean, these are the miracles that happen around me. There are many miracles I could tell you about. I wasn't here going through chemo. What I can tell you is that, and going to meetings, and I was really, really sick. And another miracle. And there's this a friend of mine I knew was a nurse and the program. And this friend of mine said, you know, Robin, I'm a nurse. And I've never asked what kind of nurse. And he said, I'm a chemo nurse. And, you know, you're going to be all right here in a minute as soon as, you know, this gets better. And you know what? I nearly fell over. I was sitting in a meeting. I mean, what are the odds of that? Do you know what I'm saying? And there's just too many. There's so many miracles I could tell y'all about that just blow my mind. You know, at the time, whenever I got diagnosed with the cancer, what I can tell you is everyone left. It's not like you think. People don't just cocoon you and like, oh, my God, and you know, you have cancer. Everybody's split because they were like, girl's going to die. So everybody left. You know what I mean? And, some people I learned in here too, that's okay. Really, it's okay. And I have to get okay with that, because not everybody can walk through that and be there, you know? And expectations. It taught me a lot about expectations. And what I can tell you is another God thing. You know, I was in a relationship at the time, and it ended 2 weeks after diagnosis. But what I can tell you is a couple of years later, I went to see that person and made my amends. And, you know, they let me make my amends. And what they said to me after I made my amends was, Robin, thank you, but I just lost my father to cancer. And can you tell me what that was like? And, you know, we got to share. What I'm trying to tell y'all is it's just big. Once I realized it's so much bigger than I am, and the people that God puts in my life, you know, that's if you're new in this room, what I can tell you is that And I know I've been all over the place since then. I've had a big life in sobriety. So I'm trying to compact it. But I have had an awesome life in sobriety. I have gone to meetings in Malibu where there's bonfires and people like, oh my God, there's no words. And I have such gratitude. I have just amazing gratitude for this program. And what I can tell you is when I came in here, I thought my life was going to be boring. My life was over. I had no life. You know, this gave me a life. And I have had this amazing, fabulous life. And, you know, and what I can also tell you is, like, that whenever I did go through my chemo, you know, that was a very huge moment whenever there was nothing there but me and God, you know. And they say sometimes in here that, you know, it might just be you and God. And that was the moment when that was it. There was nothing. It's just me and God there. And, you know, that was a huge, huge experience for me. And, you know, it changed my life. It truly did. And so many different ways. I have this spiritual connection today that maybe I didn't have before. So what I'm trying to say is every time I think that this worst thing in the world has happened to me, it has been the most awesome, best thing. And that's what I can tell you. I can't see it when it's happening. But when you get to the other side, it's amazing. You know, it's you know, when I get to the other side of it, it's like I had no idea. And the plan that God has for me is amazing. You know, and you know that I look back on it. I mean, I would have never imagined that my life is things that would have happened in my life. And you know, this is like an incredible. I think it's a roller coaster ride. I think it's an incredible journey. You know, I think it is an incredible life to have. And you know, I have this amazing, I don't know, I listen to people today when they talk to me. You know, I really hear them. And I didn't do that before. You know, I was always like in a hurry. I've got to be somewhere. I've got to be somewhere else. I got to do something else. And you know, I was never really hearing them. And you know, I really hear them now. And you know, that's a gift. All the promises, everything I'm talking about, these are the promises that come true in your life. I'm standing here and I'm comfortable in my own skin. I actually like who I am today, and I have some peace. And I never thought that I could say that, you know, and that's an amazing thing. You know, the promises, they really do come true in your life. And it's just... only thing I can say is it's just been incredible. There are no words. And like I said, I know I probably sound like I'm repeating myself, but when I think about so many miracles that have happened that I can't explain, you know, I just don't have any explanation for them. And, you know, we lost everything. I can tell you, when I went through the chemo and the cancer, we lost our home. We lost everything. I lost my career. I couldn't work. A lot of things happened. And you know what? It was okay. I didn't think it would. Everything has been okay. And that's huge. I never thought that to believe that everything is going to be okay, no matter what, that's what I'm trying to say, is that I just could never get to that place where I believed everything would be okay. And turn my will and my care of the care of over to God. You know, what if God's will is for me to do something that I really don't want to do? That's pretty heavy duty. You know what I mean? And I've got to be willing to go to any length. So when I'm praying for God's will in my life, I don't know what that is, but I have to be willing to show up and do that. And that, I've grown up in here. I'm going to say that. I mean, Tom will tell you. And, you know, at least, you know, my hair might be a little bit calmer today, a little bit than it used to be. And I'm not wearing too much hardware, you know. And, but, you know, we grew up around here, you know. And what did I think was going to happen? I mean, we get to laugh about it in a way. I've grown up. I've gotten older around here, you know. And I'm like, wow, you know, when did that happen? And, but you know, these are the gifts that you get around. You get to laugh at yourself, you know, and unconditional love. These are the things I've learned in here. To laugh at myself, unconditional love, it's going to be okay no matter what. And people loved me till I could love myself. You know, and that took a while. That took a while. I'm still a work in progress. I think I'm one of those. I have the emotional, issues, but it says that those two can recover. They have the capability to be honest, and I am of that variety, and I do think that if I can do it, anyone can. I do believe that. And I come in here. They also told me you have to be willing to can't save your ass and your face at the same time. So I have to be willing to come in here and look crazy and say whatever's going on and talk about it and get honest. And that's it has saved my life. And there's some people around here. I tell you, I look to them because they have shown me, the courage and the things that they have walked through. We walked through some real heartache in here. We walked through some losses. We walked through some pain. And the thing is, it's like, we get to the other side, We don't have to do this alone. And there are people in here that I really look to for that. And on the rough days, sometimes I think about those people, even though, they're friends of mine here. And I just think, really, I carry them in my heart. So when I'm having a rough day, I think about the things I've seen them go through. And they didn't take a drink. I have two close friends. Couple of years ago, within a couple of months of each other, they died. We go to a lot of funerals around here, they had double digits, both of them, and they died by way of suicide. So it was extremely painful for me. But we go through, and when I think about the people that I was close to, there's only a handful that are still here with me now. So this disease is it's deadly. It's deadly. And, I don't mess with it. I am grateful to be here with my life. I don't, and they told me that early on, and they told me get in the middle of the bed. And that's what I still do. And especially when I know that it's going to get crazy, like when they told me I was going to go through the chemo and I was going to lose my mind and go crazy, I knew I better get in the middle of the bed. That was the first thing I thought. I got to get to a meeting, and I got to really get connected, and I got to get in the middle of the bed and really get into something and try to help somebody else. And you know what my sponsor told me also at the time was, I was like, I'm going through this, and my sponsor was like, well, see, the person next to you is going through worse. And that's true. I was I didn't have to look far. I had stage 2. I don't know if anyone knows anything about it. There are 4 stages. Person next to me had stage 4. So, I learned that in here. And I got to be like, how you doing? How's your day going? These are the gifts that we get in here. To get out of myself. And this is, a self-centered disease. And it's a thinking disease. So when I am helping someone else or getting out of myself, and if I can't find anyone else to do that for, I can hold the door for somebody, and I can help somebody to the car, I can you don't have to look far. And, I think, and all these things that I'm talking about, I learned in here, how to suit up, show up, how to be nice, how to get out of myself for a second. And, these may all seem like real small things, but when your ass is falling off, they really matter. There's really small, tiny things that they taught me in here that were like, they really came into play. And I couldn't get to, there was a while when I couldn't go to meetings. I was real sick, so I could not come. And so I really had to do the things, I had to remember the slogans and the things that are said here. I do my praying and my meditation. But I know I've been all over the place, and I know I've talked for quite a while, but I hope that I've said some things that made sense. I'm still kind of out there, I know, but I'm doing the best I can with the coming back from the chemo. They tell me that I may not always have a full deck, but you know what? That's okay. I didn't to begin with. I don't know the difference. You know what I mean? You know, I was also thinking, I'll tell y'all this. I was thinking, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. Now I'm going to go through cancer and y'all are going to kill what few cells I have. I was like, no, I need these. You say, I need these. And you know, the thing is like, I can laugh about that today. I can come in here and laugh with y'all and tell you it really doesn't matter. It's okay no matter what. Because guess what? I didn't take a drink. And I'm standing here with my life. And you know, but anyway, thanks for letting me share.